Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Football is back, and we have you covered each weekday afternoon on OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Some of the best football guests, from Armando Salguero and John McClain to Trey Wallace and Bobby Carpenter, plus the top headlines and reaction to the college football and NFL weekends.
The Chiefs go for dynasty mode with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid.
They're the favorite, right?
Yeah, they have to be. The AFC goes through Arrowhead, but the Bengals and Jets, they're all in to reach Vegas. And the Bills and Dolphins are also confident. Withrow, what about college football?
Can you say three-peat? That's what they're hoping to say in Athens, Georgia, as the Bulldogs continue their march to college football dominance, while a cast of usual characters led by Michigan, Ohio State, and Bama nip at their heels.
There's plenty of craziness on a week-to-week basis. Pull up to the bar with us each weekday afternoon. We're streaming live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across the OutKick Network. Podcasts available everywhere, and always check out OutKick.com.
NFL and college football covering your favorite teams. OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our first bonus episode for you, the patrons of the dungeons, the pod people, for There Will Be Dungeons. My name is Scott Johnson. I've got Kristen here. We got Kyle. We got John. And we have Bo. And welcome to our freewheeling bonus episode where we discuss all things There Will Be Dungeons. I'm going to very quickly toss it over to Kristen, who has your questions to be answered right here on the show. Kristen.
Thank you so much, Scott. Hello, everybody, and welcome to There Will Be Dungeons Roundtable, April 29th, Stardate, April 2019. First question comes from M. Fanton. To John, do you think Stanley will ever get rid of Dian Talis?
Oh, I'm sure. One way or another, it'll probably happen. Although, I don't know. I toyed with the idea the other day of, like, what if there was an eventual coming to terms between the two of them. I have no idea what it would take to get that to happen, but like, what if they just were at peace with one another? That'd be weird, but I don't know. Right now they both want to get rid of each other, so it'll probably happen.
We didn't see Dian Talis in episode one of this new season at all.
No, at least we don't think we saw him.
Mm-mm.
We haven't seen him in a while. He's been gone.
And do you have, I have a question. Is that, do you have full control over that now? Like, can you tell him to knock it off and go away and not come back? Or what's our status? I kind of forgot how we left him.
So as it currently stands, as of the last episode where Dian Talis was in, the rule is anytime Stanley goes to sleep, Dian Talis has the ability to take over and vice versa. If Dian Talis goes to sleep, Stanley has the ability to slip in as they lose consciousness. So Dian Talis has been opting not to do that for reasons that only he knows. And as of right now, that's where everything is at.
All right.
Cool. And I have a question off of that. Will Dian Talis need a body when he finally takes form again? Or is he sucking down magical power to create like a magical form?
I don't know. That's more a question for Bo. I honestly don't know what I'm working towards with the magical power, and I don't think he's going to tell any of us. He's already shaking his head.
Stanley has a body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's
worst case scenario is one of his.
My understanding is that there's a rocket ship that the High Elves are from space. John is a Spider-Man fan, which is why I want to take Dian Talis and put him in a bag and put him in the rocket and launch him into space. Because Venom and Spider-Man, and you'd love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So, Bo, just remember, Venom, Spider-Man. All of that's going to matter one day.
Websack.
Yep. Websack.
All right, Scott, next one is for you. And I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Jan Laxo. If There Will Be Dungeons was set in the world of the Kevin Costner classic Waterworld, what kind of vessel would we be riding around in?
Oh, my gosh. We could still call it the Vape 4 or Fate 4.
Vape 4.
Let's do the Vape 4. it would be
that movie of all changes in a world where people vape.
Right,
they're all smokers. Like,
that's
now
true.
All
yeah,
they, that was literally their faction,
wasn't
right?
It?
Yeah, totally, it was their currency. That and paper.
Oh, yeah.
So if you okay, here's what we'd do. It would be a lot like Costner's boat, in that it's fast and agile, not too big and lumbery, that's hard to turn or, you know, make sort of agile moves in the water.
Nothing like the Fate Four.
Yeah, nothing like the Fate Four. I mean, who knows how Bo would drive the damn thing or make us drive it. But inside, like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but in Costner's boat, there was like a basement in the boat or an undercarriage thing that you could go inside of, and that's where he kept his better weapons, more rope, you know, hooks and all that stuff. And one would assume paper, because he would always be trading in paper. And we would have a lot of space. We would go for a boat that had a lot of that space, because with all of us there, we'd want to have as much as possible. He was kind of a loner in that movie. In our version of it, it's literally how we get around. Like, there's very little, you're not on the ground very often. Well, there is no ground until the end of the movie, but you're not on other people's ships very often, and you're certainly not on dock very often or for very long. So that thing would have to be all things to us, and so we'd have to have more plants to pee on to make water. What else did they have in there? I don't know. John would have to have a tattoo on his back with a map on it. Mm-hmm. And a side ponytail.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. But I appreciate the listener pointing out the fact that that would be a fun place to try to do a campaign. I don't know how you do it, but that kind of apocalyptic world is super fascinating to me. So I don't know if everything would have to be aquatic fights and who knows? We'd have to get creative.
Given that it's a fantasy world, because you're playing D&D, like, if you're just playing a straight up human campaign, I think you'd be on boats, but there's of course sea monsters and underwater breathing, probably Atlantis, probably Jar Jar Binks is down there. You know, like, there's gonna be all kinds of stuff going on.
No, now I don't want to do it.
Well done.
He's off.
I'm off now.
Would a Ski-Doo be a dexterity mount or?
No. Sure.
Well, those are amazing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Those are some of the best things in that film. And so they have to exist in this world, so we'd have to figure out a way to make it work.
There'd be some custom skills like swimming ability, I imagine, and piloting. Like, the same piloting things we have here could apply there. You could do it with minimal. You could do one-to-one minimally.
Yep.
Wizards has released a lot of, like, water campaign-style books, like, just for traditional seafaring. So, I mean, just make it so that there aren't any places to port very much, except for created structures, and boom, you've got your campaign. But I'd expect to go underwater a lot, for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
All right, another one. This was for Scott, but I think everyone can kind of answer it because we've all had little workings behind the scenes here in these past 3 months. Is there any chance that Nash Maggard has considered looking into using the unique resources of Tiet Kala as a means of eradicating the Dientalis problem of the party during this active break?
I mean, I can say just for my own character, no. I wouldn't know how at this stage. And because I never really know when Stanley is who he is or isn't, like, I don't feel like that's my place. Nash wouldn't feel like that's his place to try to eradicate him. I mean, maybe things get so weird we all have to put our heads together and do it. But this 3 months was more about healing and sleeping and relaxing and learning how to do puppet movie or puppet stories for little kids. And for Nash, it was definitely let's settle it all down, you know, despite the dreams, let's try to have basically a 3 month respite from everything.
Stanley did. He helped build a hospital and medical library under the guise of figuring out exactly this problem. So, yeah.
How do you do that and keep it secret then from Dientalis?
He can't read minds. He only understands what Stanley says. So he's aware of anything that is said and done. So Stanley can research medicine to his heart's content and look into it all he wants under the guise of, I want to help people. But I need to learn all aspects of maladies that people could encounter and how to counter them and all of that. Whether Dientalis sees through it or not, I don't know, you know, that's how he has kind of worked around being blatant about it.
Gotcha.
Aren't we in a place right now where Varel, if you just the sight of Dientalis puts you into a rage and you want to kill him at this point?
Ooh.
So if he does show up and it's at least known to you, aren't you going to just pop off and have at it?
it was Stanley we needed. So I think by Stanley opening the hospital, I forgave Stanley of not saving lives. And it was Stanley who Burrell was saying is a coward and wouldn't come out. So that's a really good question. I know I still want to beat him up and launch him into space. Honestly, if I was a wizard, I'd want to figure out the book so we could lock him in the book for eternity down in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
But those are non-Burrell thoughts.
Right. What Varel would do, it would be super interesting to me, because I just don't think you've got you're so black and white about your thinking, or about your character's thinking is so black and white and binary, that if you're just going to take him out or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that begs the question, could Varel actually destroy Stanley's body?
Right. And we don't know.
If they're continuing to share it.
I kind of want to see how that plays out.
He could destroy Stanley's body and kill Stanley. Yeah. Probably wouldn't kill Dian Talis, though.
He likes Stanley, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it would be achieving the wrong goal, probably.
Yeah, even Nash would be sad if that happened.
Just a little.
Even Nash.
Bo, this one's for you. How many episodes were you estimating the Tiet Kala segment of the story to take at the onset? Was it the end of the Teat always planned as a reflection spot?
No, it was just planned as a place to adventure. I estimated maybe 2 episodes in town, and then
oh wow,
and maybe 3 or 4 in the keep itself. And lessons are being learned about what you can get done in 3 hours. And ultimately, I've always known, if we want to focus in on something, or if something's supposed to take 3 episodes, but something fun, you think of something fun to include in it, like the Golden Gargoyle fight was never sort of preordained. That started coming together while we were in there. Then you just sort of go with the flow and what seems natural, which is kind of the fun thing about having a regular short session, is that I do have time to respond to what's going on in the story and make those adjustments, versus if you play for 12 hours on a Friday night, you've prepped what you've prepped and you can improv some stuff. But if you go into a weird tangent, sometimes you got to say, well, I didn't really prep for, I thought everyone was going to go to the tower. Now you guys want to go to the beach, and I'd like to make the beach a fun place. So maybe we'll pick up next session after I think about that. So yeah, about 6 episodes for the whole Tiet Kala. It was supposed to be sort of a side adventure, and it turned into the adventure. And I didn't have a problem with that, but that's
interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that. Like, it felt pretty natural that was our main.
Was never a tiefling home,
right?
Teat was just a spot on the map, and then they initially thought it would be a place full of gnomes, probably, or some sort of small subservient race. Then the ideas started to form about Trashberg and about the ruling Guzzle Gang and all that Mad Max stuff that felt right. And that's what that ended up being. But I had made the NPC Monsoon Cabbage, and I made him a vampire. And I didn't really think about the backstory. I'm like, he's a vampire, he's a tiefling, he's in the town. And then as you guys entered and as that became a thing, I realized he has to have a reason for being here. He can't just randomly be here. And then the history started to form, and the history turned into, oh, the tieflings actually originally, it all started week over week forming together. Like, why would this character be here? And there's sort of as you guys are exploring the world, I'm also exploring the things that have to make sense, which is kind of why I don't like prepping. Like, prepping in advance is good, but sometimes like also coming up with things as they sort of unravel is a good way to create too. So, no, I thought it was going to be a couple of weeks, like 6 weeks, month and a half max, and then we're moving on to whatever else, and it just turned into several months, and Varel going like, God, I want to be away from human settlements at one point. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, buddy. You're going to have to get through this challenge first. So,
Do you have a naming convention? Like a PDF or a pattern you choose?
No, I come up with the names as I come up with the characters. I don't have like a list that I pull from. So, which sometimes is annoying if the creative juices are not there. But I always just seem to find a way. Like on the spot, you're going to get a really bad name, like Bok Bok. Which is not a bad name, it's legendary. But at the time, it was like, his name is Bok Bok. I don't have a list. I just think It's mostly either on the spot or as I think of the characters, I think what would be fun to call them, I guess.
I like sometimes you tend to go like, not random, but like the place that we learned about in today's episode where the dwarves have a mountainous.
Mogan Frogan.
Mogan Frogan.
Mogan Frogan is inspired by frog pants. I thought we should put a frog pants themed place in there.
Nice.
Mm.
So I definitely wanted to have the frog syllable in there.
Yeah.
And then I just worked, you know, I was like, it should rhyme. So it doesn't sound serious.
I like
it. It's a serious place.
I like it. I like rhyming names generally.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah.
It's the most serious there could be. Now, this is for everybody. The rest of these questions are for everybody. What character elements do each of you find the hardest to roleplay?
Oh, evil geez. Is the hardest for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You do good.
I play Mass Effect. I, for an achievement once, barely scraped by with a Renegade playthrough, purely for achievement purposes, and I felt awful through the entire thing. And I have a really hard time making bad decisions in games and things like that. So I will say playing Dian Talos is incredibly fun. It's some of the most fun stuff. It comes very naturally to me for some reason, but I have a really hard time with it. And the time we killed, I say we, it was me, Slippery Brent, I genuinely lost sleep that night. I couldn't sleep. I wow. felt like somebody who had done the worst thing known to mankind. I went to work the next day. I looked like a wreck. People were like, what's wrong with you? And I couldn't really easily say, I murdered somebody. it was bad. I really have a hard time with it, but it's also a lot of fun to play and try.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's probably being so gross. Like in my real life, there's no way I'm getting a fistful of bat poo and smearing it in somebody's face or going months without showers or like I'm very picky normally about that stuff. Not anal, like, oh my gosh, I can't have a speck of anything on me or I'm not constantly washing my hands or something. But I'm, you know, just I'm not a freaking pig pen the way Nash is. So it's not that it's hard to play or do. It's just very different from how I would actually be if I was in his circumstance. And like John just said, with his deal, as hard as that is even for him, it's still fun to do. It's fun to go places you wouldn't go, you know, if you're real. The same thing with the one shot. Like that character of Garpoon was really a fun offshoot for me because it's just not my normal thing at all. Like all those personality traits, all that stuff is just not me. And that's fun to play. And I don't know why I always play something like, yeah, I do this in video games too. I play characters that I'm not in real life. I just feel like it's my chance to live out the fantasy in a way that's not too close to who I am.
Oh man, I'm going to steal John's what haunts you the most kind of option. And it's when I choose a word that Varel wouldn't know, but it's too late, like helicopter. I said helicopter when we fought the Medusa. And like for the rest of the night, I was waking up in a sweat being like, Varel wouldn't know what the hell a helicopter is. And at one point I said elk and lion. I'm like, I don't even know what those animals are. I love the joke of Varel and his wordplay. And I have this great, you know, Curious George excuse as to why he knows so many words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just get frozen because I don't know if he knows a phrase or a word. And it's hard.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun to watch. I can tell the times where you're doing that, but I love it because it feels like Varel is doing that, not you. Like it's Varel smacking up against a word barrier or a what would he say in this social situation that is not Kyle, but is totally Varel. And I love watching that process because it's like having our own robot learn how to be human.
Standards that aren't lizard.
Yeah. Standards that aren't lizard. That was so good.
I would say like the same thing when I was playing Baffo and even when I play on this side of the screen, anyone that's smart and has to remember lots of knowledge is actually really because I was playing Baffo last week. I was like, wait, I should know this and put all the pieces together, but Bo doesn't actually know. So I'm just like, well, I figured it out. But don't let me explain it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you roll for this.
That part's kind of tough for sure. So again, it's sort of like the same thing you said. If you're just like, I'm playing a super smart genius, and then you've got to role play it, and you just can't because you're not a genius. I don't know what a violin's made out of, but a genius would know, obviously. Easy information. Right. Yeah.
We ran into that last campaign where you were like, hey, do you know who's responsible for this? Or what? Who would do something like this? And the answer was the principal, and I thought it, but I wasn't 100% sure, and so the only way I could say it was like a little kid in class saying a word for the first time. I was like, the principal?
Right. Like, yes. But you're a genius.
Yeah, Stanley, like, you nailed it, man. You're doing really well.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, what about you? What's the hardest place to roleplay?
Staying quiet. I share my joy very boisterously, and it's something I've had to practice as I've gotten older, is people don't like being talked over a lot. So,
talk over these guys. I think you're totally fine here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, there's always that fear you're talking too much or something. You're taking too much attention rather than sharing it with the ensemble. Yeah. So that's always the hardest thing is, oh God, did I talk too much this last time?
Mm. Oh, it's interesting to know that, because oftentimes when we hear feedback, even from other people who I think have listened to the show or listened to other D&D shows, is that we're very courteous to one another's space. Like, someone speaking, you're speaking. And on a show, professionalism is like, you want to try and interrupt, but you don't want to talk over them in that way. And I'm like, you know, most D&T tables, I think, are like people talking over each other, excited to, what item did you get? Why didn't I get that DM? He's like, shut up. It's not your turn. He's like, I'm not going to shut up. You know, it's like people are hanging out and playing, right? So I don't know. I would say we have room to crank that dial if you want. Yeah.
You're the freaking queen. You can talk over everybody for days.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you don't understand the waterfall that Kristen can become. This is like half of... But I appreciate it. That's very kind.
It's interesting, too, because I think I'm aware of that in some level, and I'm always trying to pull it out of you with the things that happen to you, I suppose, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm often, like, throwing you curveballs or... just provoking you, I think. I think I'm definitely trying to provoke you while we play. Not in a bad way, but in a, you know, get really angry and do crazy shit.
Yeah, totally. So this goes into that pretty well. Nice segue. Which traits, ideals, bonds, and or flaws are the furthest from your real life personalities to keep in check?
Oh, interesting. For me, the relationship between Nash and Stanley... and by extension, I guess Diantalus is an interesting thing, because in real life, I couldn't be more fond of John. But for some reason, I like the idea of an antagonistic relationship that oftentimes results in frustration between the two, or, you know, laughs. Honestly, a lot of it's for laughs on the show to help entertain and have this sort of be fun. But also when push comes to shove, rubber meets the road, all those sorts of famous phrases. At the end of the day, Nash and Stanley are, you know, they work together. They save each other's lives. They have a common goal. They don't, you know, they put that stuff to the side. And even though later they can pick it right back up and, you know, I can say, hey, Stanley, pull my finger and fart and laugh. And he can be annoyed with it and prestidigitate the broom or whatever. There's something about that conflict that is totally not, I don't have those relationships in my real life. Like, I don't, they just don't exist that I can think of. If they do, I'm not with those people very long, or I don't work there anymore. So it's like, that part is a weird thing that I just, it feels right for the story for me, but it's so far from my real interactions with people. Any others?
Yeah, who's next?
I mean, I would say I definitely agree with that. I think that's pretty spot on. I also don't typically have that sort of fun antagonism with friends, and it's fun to play it here. Mm-hmm. I agree. For some reason, there's just something about Nash and Stanley that has become like a fun, natural place for that to fall that just felt right from the get-go. I don't know. I'm definitely not as neat as Stanley. That's probably
you have such a nice shelf behind you.
You're so good at that.
Yeah.
That's probably more just a natural reaction to being in a world that I knew was going to be gross and gritty. And I know Bo, and I know Bo likes to err on the side of humor. And if he gets an opportunity to cover someone with shit, he will do it. Because he will always find that funny. So my reaction to that was, okay, well, I'll go the opposite direction. I'll go with a character who's incredibly neat and fancy and has to ensure that he's always very proper and clean. And that was kind of the initial, one of the initial traits that I had for Stanley. But Stanley's turned out so 100% different than how I pictured him at the beginning. Like, it's really weird to see where he's at. He's probably more like me than I envisioned him. I envisioned him very different from me, and he's probably wound up a lot more like me as a person.
It's cool, though, because that's the sort of, you know, like, you spend a lot of time thinking what your character is going to be when you start. But the world around us shapes us, and so the things that end up happening end up changing you in fundamental ways that you can't, you can make all the backstory you want, but they just affect you. You know, the DM, the other players, what happens in the story. So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I wanted him to be a liar, rogue, like not an actual rogue, but a, you know, a cheat and a sneak. And he does have those elements, but like the last person you want to follow or listen to. And so we had that meeting with the Hillmaster early on where it was like, yeah, I should be the leader though of this group. Like, it was a very high-minded thought of himself. Like, I should be the head guard. Like, all these others are just regular guards, but I should be like the head guard. And then everybody kind of let him have that victory, and he kind of just kept riding it. And it got to a point where I was like, oh, I need this character to actually be somewhat responsible and good at what he does. He can't be awful at this. And so I walked that back a little bit, because originally he was going to be, I pictured him in the back lines, never getting anything he wanted. Just,
I think part of the problem with that character type too is the world, everyone's kind of bad and selfish and shitty. So it's like, yeah, if you're in a world full of good spirited people who are gullible and take, you know, this is a place for someone like that to thrive. But I mean, the wasteland, they, people reject leadership, they steal, they hate one another. It's very actually hard to maneuver, I think, as a character of that type amongst people who are all really bad, maybe.
Mm.
Although Teak Kala might produce some opportunities. They're kind of earnest.
Yeah. This is all true.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Yeah, how about you? Either of the Fergs.
Pretending to dislike things I really, really like in the campaign.
You mentioned that a lot too, actually.
Yeah, but you know, like when we were going through the stomach and the intestines, that nasty inside of the frog, that was so freaking cool. But the whole episode, I had to go, oh, gross, hope wouldn't like this. So here I am, like, enjoying the hell out of it, going, oh, God, I want a drink.
See, I believe always Stanley hated it.
Yeah,
and John.
That's one of my secret tropes. I don't like the inside the body thing. Like, I can't watch any of those movies where you go small and go inside a body. I can't do it.
Yeah, you can't even do like Inner Space, right?
No,
that's so funny to me. You're like my daughter with zombie movies, except even a more interesting version in
it,
a film.
It doesn't like gross me out. I just get immediately bored with it and just walk away from it. Wow. I don't know where it comes from. It's just like, it's a weird quirk.
Yeah. This is probably something you probably saw an old one, like Incredible Journey or something.
I did when I was like five.
Yeah. Oh, and that thing is boring. It's a sleeper, man. So if you saw that, you were probably, that was just imprinted and you were like, no, nobody can make this good.
Well, they had that whole area dedicated to Disney.
Yeah,
growing up,
I remember that.
That was weird.
It was weird. I mean, I'm a huge, but I'm the opposite. I love that concept. One of my favorite Futurama episodes is all about everybody getting shrunk down and trying to stop Fry from being poisoned by this horrible sandwich he ate. It's a fantastic episode. But it deals with that stuff. I would like the Magic School Bus when my kids were really little, because they always were driving that bus into somebody's butthole or whatever they were doing.
Osmosis Jones had some good
Osmosis Jones is one of my favorite
movies. The bad
guy
was amazing.
I love that movie. The live action Bill Murray stuff.
The movie.
Were they? Did they get all small? What do you mean?
They go inside Unicron at one point. Does that bother you, John?
Oh,
oh no!
Does that would count?
That's so the inside of robots is okay.
That's, yeah, it turns out that might be okay. Actually,
are you okay with them going inside of Unicron? Holy shit! Yeah, but like that stuff just I'm fascinated by it. So I always find it interesting that you don't like it.
The closest I got was the Rick and Morty episode because it's a big Jurassic Park parody, and I love Jurassic Park, yeah. So it kind of gets a buy for that reason.
Sure,
a bit more fantastical.
Yeah, is that the one where they kept shrinking down to a smaller universe and then kept going down lower and lower?
No, that's a different one.
A different one. Okay.
Microverse, and the microverse has its own microverse.
Yeah, I love that one. Santa. Oh, it's so good.
What about you, Varel? What's the hardest thing for you to?
I had to think really hard about this because at first I thought I was going to be being a barbarian, but Barbarian 5e is amazing. Like all the advantages you get, the chance to hit, the rages, awesome.
Mm.
So it's Bok Bok. Bok Bok is freaking disgusting. I personally would have abandoned Bok Bok a long time ago. I think that his
oh no, my heart is breaking. His
His bodily fluids and his desire for cannibalism are nasty.
Yeah, abhorrent to you.
Like, I like my animal butts really fluffy, so I don't have to acknowledge they're functioning living things. Because I don't want to see the brown starfish.
Right, right.
Oh, listen. Hold on. You hear that? Perfect way to end it, everybody. That's our 30 minutes. Man. That's how we do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Now, if you want to know how you get this bonus per month episode for early, a week early than everyone else does, it's easy. You just got to support us by going over to therewillbedungeons.com and click on our support link, and it will all be made clear to you what you have to do. That way you can get this stuff early. So any kind of bonus content plus a whole bunch of other really cool tier benefits are available if you head on over there and sign up today at therewillbedungeons.com. Everyone else gets it a week later, and that's okay too, but wouldn't it be nice to have it a week early? That's what I'm thinking. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. See you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.